It's the Dave Monk programme, and I will talk about these lavatories if it kills me. It's said that all of us have one novel inside us, isn't it? But few of us will ever get a chance to do anything about it. A lot of us won't get around to it. We talk about it, but we don't do anything, let alone having that novel published. It's even more unlikely, let's be brutally honest, that that novel, if you do get round to writing it, will be turned into a film. But that's exactly what's happened to my next guest. He's from East Mersey. He has published a work of fiction called Dunno, and that work of fiction is soon to grace the silver screen. How did it all happen? It's lovely to welcome you once again, Peter Inson. Peter, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Let's have a look at the premise of the book, because you're an old head teacher, aren't you?
Yeah. Very old. Yeah.
Very old, and very experienced. You've seen it all. You've done it all. What were you wanting to achieve with the book?
I wanted people to realise how difficult it is for young people to grow up, particularly young men, because a long time ago I was a young man and I can remember what it was like. And a lot of young people exhibit behaviour that is not attractive. It's not pleasant to have to nag them about not doing their homework or breaking furniture. And yet there are times when, if you understood the young people better, you would know why they were doing it, and you could perhaps help them grow up. And one of the things I found when I was teaching, both in the independent sector and in state schools, is that very often boys whose fathers have walked out on them have a particularly tough time making the adjustment from childhood holding mummy's hand to being a man amongst men.
Because no male role models?
Lack of role models at home, somebody to show them how to treat mother with respect and consideration. And it happens to girls too. Girls have taken me to task and said, why focus on boys? It's just as bad for girls left at home with mum.
Yeah.
Never a man sleeping under the same roof. Mother who panics every time I go near a boy. It's very difficult for young people. And usually, certainly I found as a teacher, if you understand them and get them on side, if they realise that you don't condone their behaviour, but you have an understanding of why it's going on, you can engage in some sort of discussion with them and help them along the way. They don't change overnight, but they later on they'll often appreciate what you've done for
them. It is remarkable, though, as you said, we've all been young. You know, sometimes we look in the mirror and think, oh, what happened there then? But we've all been young. Why do we forget?
I think we're busy with lots of other things. I think some adults get very much bound up in their own lives and forget about the dependence they've created, because that's what parents do. They create dependence. And it takes a long time for young people to work through it. I think being a parent is more difficult these days.
Yeah.
There are people, commercial pressures on people. I've listened to advertisers describe how they will push things at primary age children because they recognise pester power, and that's the way to get their hands into the parents' pockets. I think it's wicked. I you know, there's no other word to describe it. And so that makes it very difficult, or more difficult than ever, to be a good parent.
Now, the book is aimed at young, teenage boys, is it?
Well, no, the book was originally aimed at teenage boys, because at the time I wrote it, and still we are concerned to get young men reading. But I also decided that, as well as writing something that would attract youngsters into reading, I wanted adults to have a way of understanding better, or being reminded of how difficult it can be for young people growing up.
So for parents as well?
For parents as well. And,
yeah,
the reviewers take that up. They point out that it's a good read for both teenagers and for adults.
Well, actually, one of the reviewers here says, very, very moving. I wanted my teenage sons to read it. Now, how do you get teenage boys to pick up a book and read it?
Well, one obvious way would be to ban reading, because boys would very quickly be round the back and they'd say to their mates, don't tell anyone I've read a book. I can't see that happening somehow. I think it needs to start earlier on. I think that once children have mastered the mechanics of reading, providing them with material, giving them time away from other influences sometimes. When I was teaching in what was then Bishop Ward School in Dagenham, it's now All Saints School, my English classes had half an hour a week of silent reading. I didn't tell them what to read. I said, you will be expected to read for one lesson a week. Bring anything you like, so long as it's not covered in headlines or pictures. I'm not worried whether it's fiction or non-fiction. Lots of boys will devour technical things, yes, sporting things. Yep. But what I said to them, you must read. If you get fed up, you ought to give each book 10 pages. If after 10 pages you can't stand it, fine, pick up something else, because there's no point in boring them silly with something. But they had to make the effort to provide themselves with materials they brought to the lesson so that if they got fed up with one thing, they can move on. And having the sense that they had some choice, some control in the matter, yep, was important. I mean, this was before mobile phones and so much of the electronic communications industry got going to provide them entertainment in their pocket. The great thing about reading is that it engages the imagination, and they have to do a bit more of it for themselves, and that can be great fun.
Tell me about the book. Tell me about the character.
The character John, he's about 14 or 15. He's never known his father. He's trying to grow up in a world where people put pressure on him to involve himself in minor criminality. He's got a friend's big brother on his back. His mother is struggling with him and with life in general. Life is pretty wretched for him. And then, by chance, he meets somebody who's a little bit older than him, a young man who happens to be a nurse. The nurse is taking out stitches from a wound and gets talking with John and helps him to take the first step. John ends up working illegally. One of the difficulties for young people these days, if they want to rebel, they are not supposed to walk out of school and say, if you don't like the way I behave, don't complain, let me leave,
yeah,
and go and get a job. It's illegal to employ them now. John works illegally, and he grows up because he works with two adults who understand him, who encourage him, but who put down some markers. And there is the discipline of the workplace, and John is learning that at 15.
Do you know, I can almost hear people listening at the moment going, do you know, that's exactly what happened to me when I left school.
Yeah, yeah, I can believe it. You know, you've got to a certain age, you're expected to be adult. The commercial world says, buy this, buy that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you misbehave at school, and they say, but you've got to, we don't like your behaviour, but you've got to stay here.
Yeah. How did the whole film thing come about?
13 years ago, I was teaching in Switzerland in an international boarding school.
Yeah.
And one of my pupils, I learnt comparatively recently, became a film producer. He's produced a number of films and won awards. And earlier this year, a friend, a neighbour who runs a book club, looked at the book and was very, very enthusiastic about it. So I sent the book off to Randall and said, what do you think? And he liked it. And we are now in the process of negotiating funding and start thinking about the script and the plot and things like that. And it's great fun. He was great fun to teach,
yeah,
full of charm and mischief. And I think he is still, and that's making him a very effective film producer.
So will it actually get to the screen?
Yes, I mean, it'll be a little while before it goes into production, but at the moment we are talking about which characters we want to make a bit more of and which we don't. Essentially, he wants to keep the story the same.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about Ken Loach and Kez and independent film making and social reality. And that's what we're both, you know, we know each other well enough to work well together.
This is really exciting, isn't it? It is.
I mean, this lad's half my age,
yeah,
and he's leading me as much as I am leading him. And it's, you know, it's, I am very, very lucky. It's great fun. And I, you know, if the film's half as good as the book, as far as I'm concerned, I'll be over the moon.
Golly. Will it be one of those books that goes to the Cannes Film Festival, one of those films that goes there, and then we don't see it? Or what's the intention for it?
I'm hoping that people will the film would make people more interested in the book, because this business of engaging people's imagination rather than providing them with 100% electronic entertainment, where it's all controlled for them, is very important. I read the first chapter of the book some years ago. When I'd come back from Switzerland, I did some supply temporary teaching in a school in West London. I went in, there was no work left for a bunch of 14-year-olds. There was a student teacher with them who was not allowed to take over. And I thought, well, I've got the book in my bag. I got it out, and she was amazed. They were silent for the whole lesson. Occasionally I'd stop and invite questions, but she said, I have never seen them respond. And it was just an old man walking off the street with a copy of Dunno, reading it to them. It works. You can hear extracts from it on my website.
Which is?
www.peterinson.net.
Good to see you again. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. And you will keep in touch with me and let me know how this is
going. Yes,
I will
do. Yes. Thank you, Dave.
Great to see you. Peter Inson. What an inspiration.